And is she like in her 20s?
I think she's my age.
Okay. So she's in her 20s.
Get fucked.
I'm Alex Higley.
And I'm Lindsay Hunter. And I'm
a writer.
Writer bud. Welcome to I'm a Writer, But. Today we have Elle Nash, who is the author of the novel Animals Eat Each Other, out on DeZank Books, which was featured in the 2018 June Reading Room of O, the Oprah magazine, and hailed by Publishers Weekly as a complex, impressive exploration of obsession and desire. A small collection of stories, Nudes, is forthcoming, is actually out. Is it out, Elle?
It's coming soon. It's
okay.
Very, very soon.
From Short Flight Long Drive Books in 2021. Hi, Elizabeth. Her short stories and essays appear in Guernica, The Nervous Breakdown, Literary Hub, The Fanzine, Volume 1 Brooklyn, New York Tyrant, and elsewhere. She is a founding editor of Witchcraft Magazine and a fiction editor at both Hobart Pulp and Expat Literary Journal. Welcome, Elle.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm
welcome,
very excited
welcome.
To have you be here on this Yay. Wonderful podcast.
Yay. We're so excited to hear you read. What do you have for us?
So I have an excerpt of something longer that I've been working on for a really long time. The excerpt is called Hit Me Baby One More Time, and
yes.
I will start from the top.
Elle, is this inspired by Queen Britney?
I don't know. Actually, that's a good question.
Okay.
I'll read it and you can tell me what you think.
Okay, I'm excited.
Right. Okay. In the room, I start my show. A few people enter, chatting as usual. I pull up an app onto the screen with my goals. 200 tokens, top comes off. 500 tokens, bra comes off. 1,000 tokens, vomit on cam. Blue text materializes above me on the screen, alerting me of a few new subscribers. The sound of coins dropping into a slot machine. I turn on the tub faucet, wet my clothes, begin to peel off a pair of socks. E calls from the kitchen. She's home early. It was infectious. I had recoiled at first, but the longer I thought about it, the more I wanted to go back. Do certain words affect the body? The desire inside me ticks and ticks and ticks. In bed at night, I feel it start at the center of my forehead and move outward, a tiny pulse. I know where it is operating, a quick, light throb down to the edges of my fingertips. I am awake and then asleep again within myself. I reach out for E and her back curls away from me like rolled paper. My mind is merely looking for something to engage it. I cannot disengage with myself. And I prefer the internet because I don't like having a body. I position myself on the rim of the tub, laptop set on toilet, seat and lid down. D27 asks for a private message and sends me 50 tokens. Will you let me mod for you? D asks. I'd seen the username around a fair bit. Dia dropped a few high tips over the last few weeks. I decide to accept. On screen, my face moves closer to the camera, the sound of typing, my tits. D27 is this month's mod, I tell the room. Don't fuck with me or you'll get banned. And stop sending fucking dick emojis on chat. More blue text, the sound of making money. D27 sends another message, which is how I know he's a man. You shouldn't vomit on cam, D says. You're better than that. You could be working for a studio. Please don't lecture me on what I should and shouldn't be doing, I type back. I will ban you too. It's uncomfortable to watch. My comfort is absolutely more important than your freedom, I say. The room was silent and no one had tipped in a while. A door sweeps open, the swing of keys, ease heels, and her voice from the hallway calling my name. I go shopping. I put things in the cart I want. 2 pounds of purple potatoes, some rye bread, fig bars, some fruit. I get what E wants, which I consider the necessities. Enough meat for the week, popcorn kernels, cooking oil, diet soda. I walk around putting more things in my cart. I walk up to the checkout desk, then turn around. I'm doing math in my head for how much it will cost. The organic fig bars are $6, and I know I won't keep them down, so I put them back. I get kale instead. I put back the rye bread. I place the bag of purple potatoes on top of a tub of apples in the produce section. I sweep up food crumbs from yesterday's dinner and see a row of ants crawling from under the sink towards the back of the fridge. The faucet pours water into the sink all over the dishes, and the sink fills, clogged with food. The ants swim towards each other, grasping arms, making little ant clumps that float along the top. When the fans are on and the doors are closed, the apartment is so big. Everything is far away. At night, with the dark closing in and the doors open, it's all too near. I open the room again on the campsite, same time every day when E leaves for work. The regulars, D, and some newcomers are on. I press my tits against the plastic container and look into the camera. Do you think if I tried forcefully vomit into this bucket when it was across the room and I missed and we went back in time and replicated the situation precisely, that I would still miss? D responds into the chat room and I lean in to see the response. I don't know what you mean, like odds 50-50, he says. I mean, if we replicated the conditions exactly, down to the molecule, down to the position of the moon. I'd like to think there was a possibility you could make it. Isn't there something that says we are flashing in and out of existence so quickly that it cannot be seen? Wouldn't it be somehow different? But my hands are in the same positions. So is the bucket. So is everything. The vomit is the exact same weight and volume. Would I still miss? Someone else types into the room, tits please, and tips me 100 coins. I move the plastic container from in front of me. D enters text into the chat. I guess if everything was the same, then yes, I think you would. So doesn't that imply that life is not random, I ask? That the conditions have to be just right for this thing to happen? And if that is the case, that life is predictable, but it is so infinitely complex that its predictability cannot be measured? I wait for a response and get none. If nothing is random, then free will does not exist, I say. Randomness is a perceptual issue, D says. It cannot be measured. But we can't go back in time, so we don't know that something is predictable. It doesn't really answer the question of free will. You can still make a decision and change the course of your life, D says. At what point does it stop becoming a game? E comes home smelling like the perfumes of other women. I enjoy it, not my own perfume or hers, but the smell of others more novel. I am trying to remember the last time I felt truly lost in the abandon of my youth. The sound of a jet overhead, a large empty feeling of danger, the wild eye of a cat in the dark. My greatest sexual fantasy is she holds me down and fillets the insides of my wrists open with a fish knife. I touch her breast, the crease of her eyelid pulses. I breathe in, she breathes out like she's been running. My lungs are dry inside, like a stack of hay. We are all shopping all of the time. I go to sleep and dream of her, wearing blue, feeding me coins. The usual. I can never get to her for whatever reason. The end.
Thank you so much.
That was great.
Thank you.
That was beautiful.
Thank you.
You said it was part of a longer piece?
Yeah, it's part of like this long novel I've been working on for a few years that I actually have been struggling to like finish. It's like the one book I leave and forget and come back to over and over again, you know?
Mm-hmm. What is it that's sort of hard about ending it? Is it that, like, I don't want to put words in your mouth. What is it about it that's hard to come back to?
So I think when I started it, I feel like I didn't really have like a really good understanding of how to make a plot. So every time I got to the middle, I would like kind of stall and I didn't know like what I was doing. So I even like, I was actually even, so my kid was probably like 9 or 10 months old when I was like in the process of really trying to like finish it. And I was in that brain fog, like kind of mentality too. And I was struggling because I was like, I feel like I can't be as like intellectual as I normally am. And like, I don't know what I'm doing. And I had even asked like a really close friend, like their thoughts on it when I was like trying to rewrite it and rewrite it. And even my friend was like, I think you're rewriting it too much. Like it's starting to sound like, you know, not as dark and like intellectual as like I know you to be. And I was like, okay. So I put it aside and I just worked on a completely different project. And then every time I come back and think about this project, I'm like, I don't know. Like, maybe I just need to sit down and like brainstorm a real plot to it rather than trying to write by the seat of my pants. I think that's like the big struggle.
Mm. What is it that brings you back to it again and again?
So the main portion of the story has to do a lot with like eating disorders and like the body and sexuality. Mm-hmm. And I've never like, I don't know, I want to write a novel like about that experience just because it was such a huge part of my life. And so maybe part of the struggle is because it was such a long-term part of my life, you know, that sometimes I feel like I'm going to be forever unraveling that question of like what it means to have a body. So maybe that's, you know, like that's a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
That was the very opening that you read, Elle?
No, it's like a part that's probably, well, maybe it should be the opening. I don't know. Yeah, no, it's like a part that's kind of in the middle is how I envision it. Like I have a couple other pieces that are like connected to it. Mm. So
I just love the, you know, where you started with this like cam girl, the fact that the most surprising part of what you read was the shopping and like the really quotidian routine back and forth with like the cam routine. But then also like there's, it's so surprising when, oh, and we also have the position of the moon here. And like, it's funny how like the motor on what you read was coming from that back and forth from the very, very daily that anyone in the world could relate to. And like questioning, you know, am I even in charge of these decisions I'm making, back to the stuff that might be a little bit more like, whoa, risque for some people. But that really, it felt like the motor on it was the alternating back and forth as opposed to just staying within the cam stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
This reminds me of the other part of your bio that I didn't read. And I'm just going to read it now because I want to talk about it. Elle's writing and teaching experience is the culmination of learning under Tom Spanbauer, the creator of the Dangerous Writing Workshop in Portland, Oregon, for about 2 years as she completed her first novel, Animals Eat Each Other. And she follows along in this teaching philosophy that A, good writing has a feel to it, and B, it's imperative to create a space that feels safe within the self or workshop for the writer to unfurl their most vulnerable, heartbreaking work. Can you talk a little bit about that? Cause I think you're kind of hitting on, like the stuff that you're writing is personal. And so, you know, like you're really trying to like unravel that as you go, and it's like a lifelong project. How do you create a space that feels safe for you to create work that has a feel to it?
Yeah, that's such a good question, especially about like the safe part, because like one thing that I noticed, like, I think early on in my own writing, well, even maybe now, and also in like students and stuff that I workshop with, is that sometimes like the scariest stuff will be like tiptoed and circled around in fiction stories. Or like there's just like a difficulty in having, even just in general fiction, and having characters like face like their conflict and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess in terms of cultivating that safe space for like myself, I've really had to like let go of like what other people think about me, like even people closest to me. Mm-hmm. Like it's almost like building a personal boundary where I've had to say like, this, you know, this is what I want to do, and I'm not going to let anybody control like how I feel about it or what I put out. I'm not going to let anybody like shame me for it.
Mm-hmm.
That's been a tough process, because early on I used to be like really afraid of what like, you know, my friends or family would think or something. And now it's kind of like, well, for me, it's kind of like, you can either accept this or you can just not be engaged with me. You know, like I've had to like make that determination for myself and like go to that place, yeah. You know?
I love the idea that it's a boundary, because when I think about it in terms of, you know, my own writing, like I write a lot from my memory or things that I'm trying to understand in my own life. And it feels like I'm approaching other people's boundaries, but I never considered that I myself could have a boundary, you know, like an ownership of my memory, of my experience, and sort of like, you know, I don't know, defending it in a way.
What does that mean?
What does what mean?
What do you mean by your own boundary? Can you just give me an example of what you're saying?
Are you talking to Elle?
Either of you.
Elle, you go.
So for me, it's like, I think that it's really easy for people to feel ashamed of or afraid of, for example, their past or like just things that we've done. Like we collect these experiences and then like the things that, for example, we feel shame or have low self-esteem over and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I would say like building a boundary around it is like allowing me to, like, I will let allow myself to determine how I feel about something rather than worrying about what other people think. And then the other thing too is like a big thing for me is like the space and time to spend time writing and thinking freely, which is really hard as like a new parent, like having space to think, mm-hmm. like uninterrupted space. Like I've had to negotiate that time and those boundaries really clearly within my life. And what has been really powerful about being able to negotiate that is like, it's me literally saying like, no, like I am worthy enough to like have this time to explore this and like not feeling guilt over it. So I think that's how I feel about that.
I see.
Do you schedule time throughout the day for your writing, or is it sort of catch as catch can?
So yeah, like prior to COVID, I definitely did schedule a lot. Like I always woke up really early in the morning before my kid was awake, and then I would write until she woke up, and then like she would nap and I would have that time. And then sometimes on the weekends, then I would be able to write for like longer periods, or, you know, just like tell my husband like, hey, I'm gonna like, I'm really on a roll with this, so I'm gonna like finish this and it's gonna take me a few hours or something like that. Now because of COVID, like, and also because I am staying with my parents, which is like both terrible and wonderful at the same time, I have a lot more hands around me, like with my kids. So I've been really lucky to just have a lot more time to work. So I'm like working from home, and there's just like multiple people now that are able to spend time with my daughter, including me. And it is kind of catch as catch can, but I've kind of settled into this really nice like routine where it's kind of similar. I wake up early, I work until she wakes up. I get her to do her like morning stuff and spend time with her. And then like if my mom kind of works a varied schedule. So if she's home, sometimes she'll hang out with my daughter all day. And then I really get this wonderful stretch of time to like, just do what I need to do like work wise. So
that is incredible.
Yeah, it's been really nice. It's like, there's parts of it that have been really difficult, but like the time I have had like this past year, I feel like I've just been able to get so much done, and I've been really happy and lucky for that.
Yes. Definitely. Are you working on this novel alone, or are you working on other things as well as you're getting your writing done?
I'm working on other things as well. So like I had like, in, you know, I told you I took that break and I just worked on something else. So I had completed like a novel manuscript that I like plotted from beginning to end for the first time, you know, like I just kind of like went really methodically with it and finished it. And that took me a couple of years. And that's like out on submission right now with my agent. So I've just been in this like limbo with that. And I've been, I was working on like another different manuscript about this like girl who becomes obsessed with like this mountain, and I like wrote like 10,000 words into that, and then I like put that aside. I've been like really scattered since I've got this project on submission. And then I was like, I'm gonna work on some poems, so I've been trying to write some poems. But lately, I think because over the last couple of years I was working so heavily, like every single day, like almost every single day with it, my brain started feeling a little burnt out, so I haven't been as like busy with my own writing as normal. Like I've been editing and teaching a lot, but I'm trying to like just let my brain like take a break. And I also feel, maybe you guys have experienced this too, but like I feel because of COVID and like I have been inside so much this past year, I actually feel a bit like it's harder for me to pull forth like imagery and writing like the way like that I used to. And I wonder if it's because my experience has been so similar for the past year. It's like wake up, sit at your computer, take care of your kid, you know, I don't know, like maybe go for a walk or something. Then
yeah, you know totally. I mean?
Like, routine and yeah.
Yeah. Kristen Arnett, I think, was talking about that on our recent episode where she was like, you know, I used to just like go to the coffee shop and write, and I would just watch people, you know, like, and it's like, that is so inspiring. Even if that never shows up in your writing later, it's still just like, it's food, you know, mm-hmm. like we're not getting that kind of like nourishment as writers, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's how I feel. It's like, I took for granted like how valuable just getting out of the house, like doing things and watching people, and yeah, like sitting at a like coffee shop or talking with a friend for an hour in person over food is, yeah, because it's been really interesting.
That's like the part I definitely relate to, Elle. It's just like a conversation with a buddy, you know, getting lunch or something, just something where, you know, you're hearing someone's ideas and it's maybe less structured, you know, like Lindsay and I think the reason we have this podcast is basically to build conversations back into our lives mm-hmm. as a result yeah. of this pandemic. But yeah, you know, where someone's just going to say something that potentially could surprise you or spur you down a different way of thinking.
Yeah, I cannot have one more goddamn conversation about whether or not we can go fishing with my 5-year-old.
Oh my
God, that's so cute. Oh my God. And it's cute, but it's also, he starts the conversation over every morning.
Yeah.
So just to be clear about the fishing, Mom, are we going fishing today?
And I'll tell him exactly when we're going fishing. And it's like the next morning, he's like, Mom, when can we go fishing?
It's so funny. Yeah, I understand that too. My toddler, like, it's so weird because, like, I think maybe 2 to 3, it's like when they start becoming more social, and like she's 3 heading into 4. And she's just craving like social experience so much. Yeah. We'll like hang out with like, I have my best friend has a daughter who is like 8 years old, and we'll hang out with her once. And then, yeah, like every day she'll be like, are we going to Olivia's? Like, are we gonna wake up and go? And I'm just like, we can't do that. Like, I know every single day I'm just like, I feel so bad. I want you to have like friends. And
like, I know. And it's helpful as a parent too, to be able to be like, go play with your friends. Cause you know, once again, you can talk to them about fishing or
yeah.
Save the fishing talk for the buddies.
Please.
Yeah.
Elle, is the novel that you read from, is that one that you have had your agent involved in editorially, or is it the kind of thing where you're working on it? I know you said you had a buddy reading it and giving you some advice. Are you kind of saving it and waiting to show to your agent, or is it the kind of thing where you guys have been going back and forth, or how is kind of drafting been now that you have had an agent for a while as opposed to before maybe?
Yeah. So the one that I read from just now, my agent hasn't seen it cause it's not complete. And I really want to make sure that I get something like, at least clean to him before, so we can like spend less time trying to like edit it and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm.
Did you have to edit Animals Eat Each Other a bunch with your agent?
I wasn't agented when I had Animals.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And surprisingly, I feel like, Michelle is an amazing editor, but I feel like we didn't really do a ton of drafts, which was actually like really nice. Yeah. But this one that's out on sub now, so that experience was really interesting. That's the one that I did work on with my agent. I had like sent him like kind of the rough draft, and then we talked a little bit about plot, which was really nice. Like he helped kind of guide me a little bit in that way. And then I think I did like 2 more drafts, sent it back, and then we like he did a lot of edits, and then I actually had someone else help me copy edit as well, because I was just like really yeah. trying to get it as tight as possible, like as I possibly could. And I learned a lot through that process, especially just about how to be economical and understanding, like I think there's a difference in terms of what big publishers look for and what indie publishers look for. And mm-hmm. you know, like
yeah,
I definitely feel like how people described Animals was like raw and like gritty and kind of like full of poetry and this kind of thing. And that's like something I think my editor, or not my editor, my agent was kind of like, yeah, this part we have to cut and this part we have to cut, like all this kind of stuff. And I was like, well, that's not why people like reading me. But I was right. like, you know, I'm still gonna, I liked the concept, like really was attached to the concept of my book. So I was like, okay, I'm just gonna go with it and like see what happens, you know. But it's really interesting, just that difference of thinking about like what a mainstream publisher wants versus like what an indie press really likes, you know.
Did you feel like you were still able to, was it like closing a door but opening a window, like the edits that your agent gave you where he was sort of taking away these things that you felt were signature to you? Did you find ways to still include yourself in that?
Yeah, I definitely do. The plot and like the story itself is, for me, I feel like really proud of it. Mm-hmm. And when I began writing it, even I told myself like my goal with this was I want to try to have like a breakthrough book. Like I'm not trying to be like, mm-hmm. what everyone would like to be famous, but I'm trying to just get to a larger publisher, you know, like that was my goal. I was focusing on having a really linear plot. I was focusing on like very traditional character development. Like that's what I was doing with this specific novel. And I wasn't too worried about like the idea of losing my voice or something like that, because, you know, each novel is like a different project. Mm-hmm. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I was like, that's just not the container of this novel. This novel isn't necessarily poetic. The point is really like the character and like the story that's being told. So it was like that. Like, I think sometimes I was like a little bit like taken aback. Like I was like, why is he cutting this out? You know, but,
my baby.
Yeah. But when I thought about like my long-term goal with it, you know, I was like, I want this to try to be like my breakthrough book. And I have weird things I'm writing all the time and I'm totally comfortable like with those. And I just wanted to see like if I could, because if I could get one breakthrough book and help like establish me a little more, then like it's just, it appears to be easier to get published like further down the road, like once you have like that one book at like FSG or Penguin or whatever, you know what mm-hmm. I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's true, but I was like, I'm going to try. I have an agent. That's what they're for, is getting totally into sure. a big four, yeah. you know? Yeah.
And when you were talking to him about this, like, were you frank with him? Like, I want this to be my next step, my big step up.
Yeah. Yeah. We definitely did talk about that. And like, we had that in mind. So, but you know, what's interesting, is that like, as I was writing through the story, so the first couple of rejections that I got, they all were like really helpful. Like they all praised the writing and stuff, but a lot of them actually said that they think the story is too dark. Oh. And there's a part of me that's like, I'm really pleased with that. I like the idea that the story is disturbing, but mm-hmm. the other part of me is like, okay, maybe what I didn't realize was that, well, one, no one could have predicted COVID and the market is pretty risk averse right now, mm-hmm. I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing is that, and maybe this is like, I don't know, it's just maybe my personal opinion, is that really big books, they tend not to have characters that are super working class.
Mm-hmm.
And my character is working class. And that was something that like, I was like thinking, I was like, man, if I had like rewritten this with like maybe like this middle class, like main character who didn't have to worry about her job or something, I kind of wonder if it would be more attractive for some reason. I don't know why, but
it's totally true.
That seems like a valid concern. Yeah.
It's like, yeah. if you just took your characters and you sent them on a fancy vacation, you know, mm-hmm. it's like you would have a hit.
Right. Know? Yeah. And I thought about that for a while. Like I was like, I wonder if that's what's going to happen, as they're not going to connect to the character as much. And now there's this part of me that's like, because it's been a while and I've had quite a few rejections and I'm just like waiting. There's a part of me that actually is, I'm at this point of acceptance. Like I'm like, if this goes like independent press, I'm actually okay with that, because I love the book that I have made. I want to talk about working class stories. And if that means that like I end up not getting like with a big four or something, that's totally fine to me. I have like, I mean, I'm like, how old am I? 34. I have like years ahead of me to continue like working towards a long-term degree, like I have or degree or career. I have way more like books in me that I can continue to write. And if it doesn't like break through this time, like I've actually made peace with it.
That's so cool. I love what you said too, Elle, about like some of these reactions you're getting is like, okay, this is great writing and it's really dark. And, you know, that's L. Nash. I mean, like, so regardless of, you know, how much you feel like was maybe changed with that project with your agent, I mean, that sounds like your work. I mean, your work is, of what I have read, is typically very dark and it's well written. So it sounds like you still got your stuff exactly how you wanted it ultimately, you know?
It's cool. Yeah. And I wouldn't even, like, I think I got one rejection that said I could do with the last like 20 pages or something. Mm-hmm. And the whole like point of that book really is like the ending. Like my goal is like really to be like, I have to get these people from the beginning all the way through to the ending. It's like the most important piece. So for me, I'm like, if I ever had a publisher who was like, sure, we'll give you like, you know, this big deal or whatever, but you have to cut the ending, I don't know if I would do it, because I'm really attached to it. I don't know.
What if you cut the ending but put it in the middle? Just pasted it.
Or if I just like accepted the deal and then snuck the ending back
in. That's right.
I like that idea. That's a great idea.
Yeah, take the deal, because it's probably not going to be in the contract that you have to delete those 20 pages or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you can convince your editor. Yeah. You know, what's funny is like I firmly believe that like the books that aren't huge, like, you know, the books that aren't about fancy people going on vacation, are the ones that linger and are the ones that people remember and like fervently love. Mm-hmm. And so, and who, you know, the books that people talk about years down the line. So it just sucks that, that they don't get the big deals, you know, like, not to say that yours, I believe that you will. And I, from what I know of your agent, like, I think you're like in the best hands ever.
Definitely.
But yeah. I just also want to say, like, it's okay to be dark, you know, like we should be.
Also, I completely appreciate you being so frank about this, Elf, because a lot of times this is the kind of talk that you don't really hear out in the open. And it's the kind of stuff that, you know, people message other writers about, or, you know, you kind of, and I think sometimes for people who are maybe a little bit newer to submitting or publishing or whatever, or just trying to write a damn story, it's so helpful to just hear someone be so frank about it. So thank you.
Yeah. And also there's like this whole attitude of like, ooh, we're writers because, and I don't know that, you know, that this is still true, but it's like, we're writers because we're artists, but it's also like, I need to make
fucking money.
Okay. Like, you know, like I want to make a living. I want to be paid.
Yeah. You
know, like other creatives get paid.
Definitely.
Yeah. No, I totally understand. I spent a long time, like thinking about like the business of like that, like just being a writer and all that stuff. And it was like hard to find that kind of information too. So I don't know why it's like kept hush hush. Maybe it's because it's just, maybe it seems less cool to like talk about that stuff. People like to like have these personalities we project, but
I think that is it.
It's helpful to like know it.
Yeah. I mean, I think even people are a lot of times hesitant to disclose how they make money, like what their real job is, or like, you know, if you're not a professor at some fancy university or whatever, if it's not in keeping with, you know, the traditional idea of what a writer is or how a writer makes money, I think people are sometimes hesitant. That's why I always like saying, you know, I just have a normal job and I'm trying to do it like everybody else. I really relate to everything you were saying, Elle. So yeah, so thanks for just being open about that.
Yeah, for sure.
I always think about William Faulkner sliding The Sound and the Fury across the bar and saying, that's the best book you'll ever read. I can't remember who he said it to. And then I jumped to Atessa Moshfegh being like, I'm going to write, I think it was with McGlue. She was like, I'm going to write like this very formulaic book because I want it to be, I want to mimic the successful type of book, you know, and like she's very
Eileen.
Was it with Eileen?
It was Eileen. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
God, I love that book.
Yeah.
And I just think that's so like, yes, we should be talking about this more. Like I am a writer and I am talented, but I also want success.
Yeah.
Why is that so hard to say?
I totally get that. That's actually where, so she wrote that, like that article, I think that was in the Guardian about finding 90-day novel.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And that's actually where, so that's where I found 90-day novel, and I used part of that process to finish my novel that's on sub now.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Because I wrote the very first draft of it in like 11 weeks or something like that. And then Of course, I spent like 2 years then refining it.
Yeah.
But I think about that all the time because she is so like fucking prolific. Like she has to be working like crazy hard because she's had like a book come out once a year now for like 5 years or mm-hmm. something like that, or every 2 years or something. And I just like, sometimes when I think about her, I'm just like, she must just be like, just working like constantly, like on these yeah. different ideas, you know?
Yeah. And like also advocating for herself for like, yes, I do want to put a book out this often, you know, like, cause yeah. I feel like sometimes you're counseled not to do that, you know, like take your time and like, don't saturate the market. And she just must be like, no, this is what I want to do.
And yeah. wasn't the most recent one, like from earlier, wasn't it like something that she had completed and then just had let sit, and then she was like, ah, maybe I want to put that out. I think it was Death in Her Hands, that what's called.
I'm not sure.
I feel the most recent one, I feel like I had read something where she was like, yeah, I just had that, I had completed that draft a year or two earlier, and I was like, yeah, maybe this is what I want to put out next. I just like to have an entire novel sitting around, I was like, oh my god, that's ready to go.
Yeah, maybe you're right, because I do remember the one previous to Death in Her Hands, which I think is my year, mm-hmm. she was on the Bret Easton Ellis podcast, she said that she was talking about her next novel and having like a male character, like a male main character.
Oh, okay.
And so when I saw Death in Her Hands come out, I was like, interesting, that's not what the book she was talking about. I wonder if it would be out and she's still like working on that one.
It's crazy.
I just like remember noticing that, and I was like,
I guess we got some Atessa fans here, huh?
Yeah.
This should be the Atessa podcast.
No, I've only read the stories. I haven't read any of the novels. There's some of those stories that I absolutely love. There's that Hollywood story in the collection that for some reason that one really stuck with me. But like the failed actor, I love that one.
Oh, yeah.
You should read Eileen. You would love it, Alex.
Yeah, I got to check it out.
Yes. Well, if you had to describe your writing, your writing's feel, to take another sentence from your bio, mm-hmm. what would that be?
That's such a good question. I don't know. I would say my goal, like my ultimate goal, is to make a reader feel like they are drowning. Like that's what I really want. Like when I read work, I get obsessed by a book that makes me feel like engulfed, you know, like I'm reading this book from Amphetamine Sulfate right now called Paresis, and then she also wrote a book called Genesis Zero. I'm like, what is her name? I gotta look it up. I think it's Isabel Nakou? Yeah, it's Isabel Nakou, and like they're two like short little books, and I'm just like, I read the first one in like 2 days, and I'm on the second one, I'm just like, God, I just feel so engulfed in this like melancholic story.
Yes.
So good. Yeah. So that's like my goal, is that's what I want people to like have. And like when I'm editing myself or trying to like teach and workshop with other people, like I'm not saying I'm like, you know, even as a teacher, I'm like, I don't necessarily think that I know anything or I'm like a keeper of knowledge or something. I'm just thinking about like, anytime I feel like something bumps me out of a story, I'm gonna like want to edit that and figure out like why it's bumping me out. And that's pretty much like my principle when I come to the page for editing other people or like trying to work on my own work, you know.
That's such a great way of putting it. I think I was Stanley Kunitz, I think, used to edit Marie Howe. Stanley, oh man, maybe I'm misremembering that, but she said that he could just look at the page and say there, right there. And wow. You would just be like, fuck. And it's kind of what you're talking about. Like, okay, this is taking me out, and why, figuring that out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you feel when the writing is good, when you're writing and it's good? Do you feel like you're drowning?
Yeah. It's like a little bit of like euphoria in a way, you know? Like, do you ever like look back old drafts and like read something and you're like, damn, I wrote that? You know? Like sometimes it surprises you a little. You're like, you feel good about yourself and you're like, dang, I really did come far. Like I've done good, you know? So it's like a state of flow, like when you're really getting into something, like when you're working on it and like, you know, that you're doing like really good, like when you're not frustrated with it and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it's like always
drowning, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. I think I usually think, who wrote this? I have I have a hard time of like even accessing the person who wrote anything from the past. I don't know. I think I can remember the room that I was in, because I feel like, especially with longer stuff, it becomes so routine where you're trying to get through it. But I'm always like, who the fuck wrote this?
You're like sloughing off your dead skin every time you write.
Exactly. Like you're a snake. Yeah.
Yeah. You're snake like boy. A shiny little wet.
Yeah. Like a tiny snake. Insignificant snake. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I think especially as a parent too, like, I feel like it's weird because I'm trying to like imagine what my life was like before having a kid. And I'm yeah, it's like, there's like this weird, like an iron door or something where you're like, I'm trying to access you, but like, it's hard to remember sometimes.
Definitely.
I pretended for so long that I wasn't different. And like, then eventually it was like acceptance, you know, like, oh, your brain literally changes. Okay. Yeah. I get it now.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually like there was this weird thing that happened for me, like right after my kid was born, and I was like breastfeeding and like all this stuff where it's like, you get like engulfed with like the child's like needs, like the baby's needs. And so you become really in tune with them, but you kind of start to like lose yourself a little bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then trying to like find my way like back to, it's like, I'm definitely not like the same person that I was, but it took me a long time to come to a place where I was like, I'm still like my own person, and I'm not just the mom, which I kind of like hate saying that too, because I think that being a mom is really powerful, like being a parent is really powerful, and it's not like to denigrate that identity by any means.
But you're sort of talking like you're talking from like an outside perception, because I think that all the time too, like, oh, these people think I'm just a mom, because just a mom to them is this trope that they don't understand because they're not a parent, right? Like,
yeah,
so I get that too, you know, like I feel like I, you know, we've talked about this before, like when I'm having conversations with other people, I'm like, yes, I stay home with my children and I'm a writer, you know, like you're just like trying to assert your identity in any way that you can, or show that you're, you know, you're more than just this one thing, even though this one thing is super powerful and important and great, you know?
Totally. Like when I remember like kind of during the first year and stuff, one thing I was really grateful for having like my creative pursuit, because I did feel like it helped me like tether to something outside of motherhood that helped me still like feel good about like myself and stuff.
Yes.
But there's also like, so for a while I was living in like Northwest Arkansas, and it's a liberal part of the state because there's a college and like that kind of stuff, but it is pretty conservative. There's a lot of charismatic Christians and that kind of thing. And I would go to like these mom groups at the library where like they have like baby story time and try to get to know their moms. There was like, you know, there was another mom on my street who, gosh, like she would invite me to her Bible study. And I was like, this is tough because I'm not a Christian. Sometimes she would invite me with her other mom friends. And like some of them wouldn't even talk to me because I like got tattoos and wear black and wear crop tops and like stuff like that. They're more like very traditional, you know, but like they were also all stay-at-home mothers, and I was always like kind of inspired and a little bit like jealous of their kind of satisfaction with fulfilling and being like a stay-at-home parent, and like like only that, and like they always seem to, and of course it's looking from the outside, but they always like seemed very like happy and had it together, like didn't seem very melancholic, like had strong community ties and all kinds of stuff like that. And I was like that to me was really powerful too. But I was also like, there's a part of me that I was like, I'm definitely not that person. I'm definitely more melancholic. I struggle. So my creative pursuit was kind of like the thing that kept my mental health like sane during that time, you know?
Yeah. I mean, some of that I feel like, it has to be denial, right? Like I remember seeing a Mormon family member pin this article on Pinterest, and she has lots of kids. And it was like, oh, this like rage or anger or loneliness you feel as a mother, that's Satan coming in.
Ugh.
And like trying to, you know, whatever.
Satan's already here.
And I remember like just feeling so desperately sad about that because you can't project those things if you're a mother, right? Like you're not allowed to, because you're supposed to be fulfilled by this ultimate role.
Yeah.
you know, and we've all been telling it ourselves that for, you know, generations, for since ancient times.
Yeah.
So it's like that. I always feel triggered by people who don't show the darker side of themselves, because it just can't be.
I know. Yeah. I always wonder that. Cause it's like, of course I'm like looking, you know, yeah. like from the outside.
Does anyone else feel like, the way I feel? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. It's super curious.
Sarah Peterson just wrote about mothers on Instagram, and Instagram is like a huge culprit of what we're talking about.
I saw this article. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was about mothers who are like embodying Victorian era mothers, like in their imagery and like, and in their, you know, fulfillment in the imagery of being a mother.
Like, what do you mean?
Just like they're mimicking these Victorian era images of motherhood. So like there's the, like the mother, like pouring like a dish of water onto her child's foot, you know, like very like pure, almost like Madonna and child-esque portraits of just simple like mother and child, you know, like this is what my role is, and this is, you know, and mothers on Instagram are doing this, you know, like and it's one of very many things that mothers on Instagram are doing to show, you know, like motherhood as their main jam in life. But it's just so interesting, because it's even in that there's like a searching, right? Like there's an assertion of self there, you know.
And that's I remember Alex Tanner had that article about Mormon mothers on Instagram.
Yes.
And really like reading that, and even thinking about the recent one you're just talking about, like that is the outlet. That's the form of expression. That's the creativity in some way, like the performative aspect on Instagram. But God, that stuff is dark.
It is dark. It's all humble brags, right? Like, yeah. And that is so
not that humble, not that humble either. I mean, it's like forefronted. It's really wild. Somebody's going to write a great novel about that.
Oh, totally. In the same token, I feel like I also feel solidarity with these mothers, because it's like I can, you know, like we all have that in common, I guess. But
I think it's cool that both of you have said extremely generous statements about these groups of mothers that are, I mean, Elle made the comment about almost feeling jealous of their comfort with their, at least, yeah, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but just there was some respect there at least. And I mean, I don't know what Lindsay just said. Jeez, I just, I don't know. You guys are much more generous than I am. I'm just like, what the fuck is this?
Because I'll tell you why. And anytime I have felt any judgment about a parent or about a mother's choice, I have inevitably had to make that choice at some point. And I've been like,
I know. Yeah, that's actually, I know. So like recently I was reading some, oh my gosh, I wish I could remember the post. I was reading some like, am I the asshole thread on like Reddit about this, this friend has a mother with three kids, and she was over there, and the poster, like she's like married, but has no children. And she's like, kind of, she was judging, like the father was like kind of stern with the kids. And so the mom was like, I think this man is abusive and abusing the children. And I just looked at my friend and told her, I can't believe you let him get away with this. You're a bad parent. And I was like,
oh my gosh,
I know. I was like, it's like, there are, yeah. When you make a judgment, like on another parent, it's like, you just don't know, because childhood is like, parenthood is like so unpredictable, you know, like you could judge a parent for being like, oh, I would never let my kid do that, like in public or whatever. And it's like, guess what? In a year and a half, they're going to do it in public. And you have to like, let go of like your expectation of it. And there are lots of preconceived notions that people have about being a parent until they experience it. Cause I definitely like had my own thoughts on what it was like to be a parent before I became one.
Definitely.
And then over like, even when she was first born, I was like, yeah, I'm going to do the Montessori thing. I'm not going to have any plastic toys. There's going to be like no sugar for like the first 2 years. Like I was like that kind of parent, and then like really crazy about pesticides and stuff like that. And like now I'm kind of like, yes, you can have like your third piece of candy for lunch. It's fine.
Oh my God.
Like, you haven't even eaten breakfast yet. It's whatever.
My kids are like, what? When's screen time? When's candy time? Cause they know they get screen time and candy time every day. It's like, you know, and I remember thinking like, I'm not going to be the person who posts pictures of her kid on Instagram. I'm not going to be. And it's like every mom goes through that. And then the kid, the baby's born and the mom starts going, I'm sorry. I won't keep posting like this. I promise I won't keep. And then it's just like, you give in, you know, it's just like, first of all, we want to see the baby pictures. So yeah, give it to us.
I love seeing people's kids pictures. There should be zero guilt about that. It's like these kids are so happy running around. I love seeing that. It's fine.
I know, especially like newborns and stuff. Every time I look at like a newborn or a baby who's younger than 4 months old, my brain goes like, oh my God, so cute. Do you remember when Wednesday was that little? And then what happens is I go, that's a fucking trick. Don't have another one right now. It's a biological trick.
Your body is lying to you.
Yeah, exactly. I guess I'm like, you are already tired. You are already stressed. You need to wait.
Oh my God.
Yeah, at least until she's in school, and then you can think about it maybe.
My husband and I were like, we'll try one time to have another child, and then we got pregnant with our second immediately.
Yeah.
And then got pregnant with our third while I had an IUD. So it's like your body will betray you.
Oh yeah.
God.
But yeah, in the best way possible.
Yeah, I know. It's like it's really hard. It's really hard, but then like now since Wednesday's 3 and a half, she can like have her own conversations and her own thoughts, and she makes up stories. And I think like even with all her tantrums and stuff that are ongoing right now, I think the thing that is so like so wonderful and so cute is like in the evening she'll come like cuddle with us while we watch TV, and then she'll just be like, I love you, mom, or something. Or like she says, she has this thing she's doing now, she's like, mama. It's like the way she says it, and I'm just like, oh my God, it's so cute, but also really annoying, but so cute. I know you're not gonna say it this way forever, so I'm just gonna like treasure it.
God,
it really is feeling all of those things at exactly the same time. Like I'm gonna scream, but I love you.
Yeah.
I know. So have you been able to, how are you guys doing with like, are you able to write at all right now? Like how do you guys manage it?
Well, Alex, so this is like, I was going to bring this up earlier. Like Alex is in the middle of editing with his agent, and one of my books is out on submission. And in the meantime, I'm writing this new novel. And I saw Matt Bell tweet about this the other day where it was like, he has a book coming out and he thinks the best thing to do when that's happening is to be very deep into a new project. And I've never done that before. And who knows what will happen with the book that's out on submission, but I really appreciate having a project that I'm working on that isn't this thing that's out on submission, or like, I'm not really I don't have to like think deeply about it, because if I think deeply about it, like I'll cry and scream and pray and beg. And, you know, like, it's just nice to be like, well, I have this other thing that I'm also working on. Kind of what you were talking about, Elle, like while you're, you know, your novel's out on submission, like you're working on all this other stuff. So it's like,
yeah,
you can make peace with, you know, with what's like happening.
Trying to forget about it. I know.
But yeah, I think Alex is in a break. I'm speaking for you, Alex. I'm sorry. Alex is in a break from writing, and I'm working on a new thing.
Yeah. I'm still editing the novel. I'm towards the end though. I have like another week or two and I'm done. So yeah, I feel like I have like the punch list is down to like less than a page. So I'm really close. I'm ready to be done.
Nice.
Yeah.
Super close.
Yeah.
Lindsay, since you have a few more like books out, I feel like you're a bit more like veteran style. Like, has the submission process changed for you like since having like your first couple of works published, or what has that been like?
Yeah, it's very different right now because well, my last book didn't earn its advance out, and so that's bad. You know, like when you're submitting a new book, the publishers are going to look at your sales and be like, oh, she doesn't sell that well. And I've always been able to rely on the relationship I had with my editor at FSG, but she's no longer at FSG.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very different. And I've been really fortunate to like collaborate on like how we're going to talk about this new book with my agent. But I really don't know. I really don't. It's kind of scary. It's kind of a crapshoot. Not a crapshoot. It's a long shot is what I meant to say.
Yeah. It feels like new territory in a way, almost like when you're kind of like a debut, it's like you have to really struggle to like convince other people that it's like worth it in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Cause that they're going to, especially like you were saying, like right now everyone's very risk averse and they want to win, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's going to be hard to be like, cause I feel like I have a name that people know and I feel like, you know, I can, mm-hmm. I have that, but I don't have the sales to back it up.
So. Everyone's saying no to Lindsay. Just absolutely get fucked.
That's right. So
give me a break.
Here's a question I'm curious about too, right? So I had talked to one author this year who said that their first book didn't sell. I think it was a collection of stories. And so, or maybe it was a novel. And so they actually just like put it aside. Like they just kind of like let go of it. Wow. Would you ever like give up on a book, or would you, for me, I think like, for example, like if I had a book that didn't sell, that I would just try like my hardest to even find like the smallest indie pub. Like, wouldn't you,
or would you not, just like put it aside? I would never give up. No, I would not put it aside. I
wouldn't. Yeah.
I would absolutely not. Fuck no.
Cause it's so much work.
Yeah,
it is. And I actually love the book that's out on submission right now. Like I absolutely love it. And like, it's something that I would want to read. So I have a lot of
so like, you too, Lindsay. Hope. I mean, this one is like so you.
I wish I could. God, that means the world to me because
oh my God,
I want it to be so me. So I don't know. So I did tell my agent like because I loved working with Featherproof, who put out my first book. Like yeah. I'd be, and I actually have a new collection of stories as well. And I was telling him like, I'd love to get that published on a small press. Cause you can't get that. Like no big publisher is going to be like, yes, a collection of Flash, give it to me. Yeah. But even so, I just think like indie presses do better with them anyway. I would absolutely be open to that. To any, like I love small presses. I love indie presses. So, I just really love this book and I just want it out there. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally get that. I know. I remember when I first started talking to my agent and he said that short story collections don't really sell. And I was like, okay, well, I was talking to Elizabeth and she was like, I want to put out a book. And I was like, okay, let's see what I have. Like,
yes.
And I'll put together a collection because if it's not going to be at a big price, that press anyway, like I'd rather just, I want to do the weird stuff indie, like mm-hmm. I have mm-hmm. a really short experimental novella coming out at some point, like with another small press, and I'm like, yeah, no big publisher's ever going to take a 20,000 word like experimental novella, so
right.
I just want to like stay indie sometimes too, you know.
We just learned about novelettes. Have you heard of a novelette?
No, what is
Shannon
that?
Shannon McLeod told us about it. It's like 10,000 words.
Isn't that like a chapbook or is it really a novelette?
Sure. She said it was a novelette. Yeah.
Fascinating. Yeah. Oh, is that her? Is that Whimsy that's out?
Okay. So that's a novella. She originally called it a novella in stories, but Long Day Press was like, let's just call it a novella because people aren't going to want to buy a novella in stories. But yeah, novelette. That's a thing.
Interesting. I love short books. They make me feel so productive. Like I read as well, you know.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I am trying so hard to like get through Moby Dick, but the idea that it's like 120 chapters or something like that, I'm just like, I can't. It's so tough for me to like sit down and pay attention. I really want to.
That book's so much better reading with a group, I think.
Oh yeah.
You need to be able to like talk about it and
yeah.
That's one of the few like big canonical books that I feel like when I pick it up, I'm like, okay, I'm with it. Like this, I'm really tracking right away. It feels very modern, I feel like, as opposed to some other stuff that
I am surprised at the modern feel of the language. I mm-hmm. felt that way with Frankenstein as well.
Oh, really?
I'm obsessed with that book. And for some reason, it was just, I was worried that because of like my short attention span, I was like, I'm not going to like it. But the language and it feels like, I don't know. It's just really immediate. I loved it.
Awesome. I read it in high school. I haven't read it since.
Yeah.
I have never read that. I read Anna Karenina years ago and remember thinking the same thing. Like, oh, wow, I don't hate this. I get it. Yeah. I understand it. Why did I wait so long? Anyway, books. All right, Elle. We're going to release you.
All right.
Into the world.
It's been wonderful talking with you. This has been like great.
Thanks so much for coming on. Yeah.
Yeah.
When is Nudes coming out?
So it's a surprise drop. Yeah.
Okay.
Like hopefully soon. You know how like Taylor Swift, I guess, like dropped a surprise album or something?
Yes. It's
kind of like that. I don't know when even. So I
even awesome.
If I wanted to say I couldn't. We'll find out. Just keep like an eye on like Twitter.
I love that idea.
Yeah.
Cool. And,
like, see. So,
nice.
Yeah.
So yes, everybody follow Elle on Twitter so you can stay up on
me. Yeah, Sad Erotica.
At Sad Erotica.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I really appreciated how open she was.
Yes, that was so good. We talked about so many things that I've been wanting to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Next time we have Elle on, I'm going to talk about how she's the only Colorado author we've had on.
Whoa.
I know.
Is Dan Sean in Colorado?
I don't think so. Maybe.
Is he in the Pacific Northwest? We should have Dan Sean on. He'd be great.
Sure. He's from Nebraska.
I can text him. I have his phone number.
Oh, jeez. Have I told you my Dan Sean story?
No.
Oh, my God. This is so funny. First AWP I ever went to, the only one I've been to when it was in Chicago, whenever that was. And I saw Dan Sean walking by. And I was like, oh, my God. And I had just read whatever the fuck that novel is. One of the earlier ones. Anyway, he's walking by. I was all excited. And I really love his work. I was like, oh, shit. So he's walking by and I go, Dan Sean. And he stops. He turns around. And I didn't know what to say because it was like I was just so excited, like just fucking nerding out that a real writer had walked by. And that what I told him was, my dad's from Nebraska. And he looked at me, smiled, and then just kept walking.
Oh, that's similar to my Brian Evanson story. He read at Quickies Chicago. Maybe it was the same AWP because it was an AWP event. And I love him. And he's a former Mormon, right? Like he was excommunicated from the Mormon church. And so was my father. And I said, this, like, I was like, oh, thank you so much for reading here. You know, you and my dad would have so much to talk about. And he was like, okay, thanks for making me feel old, you idiot. And like an hour passed by before I realized what I had done. I went over and clarified. I was like, because you're both ex-Mormon. And he was like, oh.
I love that you went over and did a follow-up.
Yeah, I just couldn't, like, I couldn't let that stand.
Oh my God. Well, I did ask our friend, Elisa Gabbard, for a poem. Yes. I was like, send me something to read.
She is our, the hell's the word?
I don't know what you're going to say.
You know, like when there's like a rooster.
Or like, you were going to say doula.
Oh, well, I guess.
I don't know.
We're like her doula because we're birthing her poem.
Well, this is not her poem. It's just a poem. So maybe
mascot.
She's like.
Mascot. Yeah, because she's our poetry mascot.
Oh, okay. That's great. I'm sure she's gonna love that.
Man, that's like me telling, is this like as insulting as me telling Brian Evanson, oh, my dad would have a lot to say to you?
No, because the difference is Elisa knows we're fans. Okay,
good.
All right. So this is a poem that I haven't read yet that I'm gonna read for the first time right now by a writer named John Woodward. And the poem is called Salamander. Mm. The janitor asked me how to pronounce the creature's name, and I said salamander for him. He looked at it on the screen, and I looked at him. Slide your legs into its tail, I said. I can't, he said, as he did. Dish your guts there into its cavity of guts. I can't, he said, manifestly untrue, for he did so. Mash the thing's name and yours, I said, together into that irreversible hole I know you keep. And he did. And it broke over his face and it flowed, water from the earth. I can't, he said.
Holy shit.
Yeah, she's pretty good at picking poems.
Oh my gosh. Also, the word salamander is beautiful.
It is.
Wow. Forthcoming in 2 years, my novel, Salamander. Salamander.
I was going to say my broken brain takes a beautiful word and puts it on the back of a jersey. So I could just like picture salamander arching over the back of like a 33.
Salamander is our mascot.
Did you get any work done this week?
Hell yeah, brother. Cool. I sure did. Yeah. And it got weird. And I love that.
Nice.
You know, where it just like pivots and you're like, what did I just do? And Alex and I exchanged our books and we're reading each other's books right now.
We did.
Just telling you, the listener, that.
Yes.
And
true.
Your book is wonderful so far.
Thanks, Sam.
I'm excited for you to send it out and get six to seven figs.
Oh, seven figs?
Yeah.
I'll take three figs, four figs, a fig.
No, you will not take a figure.
Fig Newtons, whatever. Are you reading anything good right now?
I am. Oh my gosh. Okay. I'm reading a Tin House book. So of course it's good. It's called The Whispering House. It's by Elizabeth Brooks.
Oh, I keep seeing this on Instagram everywhere.
Yeah. It just came out. I don't know if it was out in the UK before.
Okay.
So my favorite kind of horror movie is what I call people in chunky knits running for their lives.
Mm.
And this is the equivalent of that in book form.
Whoa.
So like, it's super like creepy. And you know how you can like see the danger before the main character can see it. And you're like, you idiot, go. It's just delicious. So I'm very much enjoying that. Yeah. And Ben finished that Matthew Norman book. And I'm going to read that next, I think.
Normcore, sure.
Normcore, yep. But yeah, that's it. Nice. What about you? Any reading right now?
No reading.
Okay. All right.
All right, that's it. We did it.
I'm a Writer But is recorded by Alex Higley and me, Lindsay Hunter, in our respective basements. Because there's a pandemic out there, please wear a mask.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Editing by Lindsay Hunter. Music by Max Loop.